Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Welcome to the brightest audience in the country. I'm Fred Williams, host of Real Science Radio. Last week, we covered the latest news on the James Webb Space Telescope, which is like the 38th nail in the coffin for the Big Bang Theory. So I'd encourage the listeners to go back and listen to that show. It was a lot of fun, and we'll have more to report on that on the James Webb Space Telescope. We've got yet another Real Science Radio prediction that we are pretty confident will come to pass. So we never had a chance to get to Anne Heche and the issue that brain dead does not mean dead. It's a super important topic that Bob and I covered a little over 5 years ago. And Doug McBurney and I did not get a chance to get to that because we had so many fun things to talk about the James Webb Telescope. So I'd like to welcome back to the Real Science Radio studios none other than Doug McBurney of the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back, Doug.
Fred, it's great to be back. Thank you for having me on. By the way, just want to let the audience know, Fred's probably not familiar, but a full pack of cigarettes is 20 coffin nails. And you just said there were 38 nails in the coffin. So that's past a whole pack of coffin nails. That should be the end of that hypothesis,
yeah,
I would
think.
Yeah,
that's just short of two full packs.
That's right. That's almost two full packs. All right. So go back, folks, last week. Check it out. The pictures coming from Webb. The Big Bang hypothesis in a crisis. But this week, we want to talk about the issue of brain dead is not dead in light of the news surrounding actress Anne Heche.
Yeah, so with the tragic and untimely death of Anne Heche in the headlines over the past, actually now 2 weeks ago, many people might be wondering what is meant that she was declared brain dead and why after she was declared dead, were doctors able to keep her alive to harvest her organs?
Yeah, you know, Fred, as far as I can tell, well, let me just start with Anne Heche. Anne Heche, if you have paid attention to the news, the thing she was most famous for was dating Ellen DeGeneres in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. Every article you read, that really became the defining aspect of her life and her fame and her career. And as far as I can tell or remember, Fred, that Bob Enyart, the founder of KGov and Real Science Radio, he only mentioned the name of Ellen DeGeneres like once, maybe in the past 10 years or so. And he always used that term, Ellen DeGeneres, that her actual name lends itself so easily mm-hmm. to that term. It's unfortunate. But he might have only mentioned Ellen once in the last 10 years. And that's really right in line with Ellen DeGeneres' visibility over the last 10 years. Because if you've noticed, as the left and the pop culture and Hollywood, as they use a celebrity up, they then tend to dismiss them more and more. And so they're just about done with Ellen at this point. And it turns out, by the way, according to many media reports, that she's pretty much a mean, rotten human being who pretty much treats the help like garbage. And so maybe there was only so much of Ellen mm-hmm. that even Hollywood could take. And so Ellen DeGeneres has been fading from the scene for a good while now. But the year I started working for Bob's TV show, that was the same year Ellen and Anne Heche decided that the time was right to force Middle America to look at them and their dirty, deviant relationship. And Ellen decided to just throw it and vomit it out right there in our living rooms, 1997. Mm. And because it was Ellen DeGeneres, there was just no way of getting away from it. If you had any connection to the pop culture at all, the fact that Ellen DeGeneres came out as a lesbian on TV publicly in front of God and everybody, it was simply unavoidable. And by the way, Fred, that's one of the reasons that I have raised my children with virtually no connection to the pop culture whatsoever is because if you get your kids into pop culture products early, unfortunately, there are some things they're going to witness that they can't unsee.
Yep.
And so I just don't want that to happen to my kids.
Mm-hmm. That's smart.
And that was what would happen in 1997. All of America was force fed this. Well, I mean, Ellen had built a pretty successful career, if you remember back on her primetime sitcom, right? Do you remember Ellen?
Yeah, Ellen. Yep.
Yeah, I remember her as a stand-up comic that I used to watch on, I don't know where, but a stand-up comic. I watched her stand-up comedy routine in the early 90s, and I thought she was hilarious.
Yeah.
So she was very talented, funny, and she had one of the top shows in the country. She was touted as, you know, one of the most beloved and funniest women in America.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like the spring of 1997 was her career was at its apex, I would say. And so she decides to come out as a lesbian on the Oprah Winfrey Show. And then it was all coordinated with the network so that she came out on Oprah, and then her character on her TV show came out. And all of America back then, Fred, it's hard to imagine, but back then it was actually shocking and it was scandalous.
Yep.
It was scandalous that the most popular comic in America has come out like boom, right there in front of everybody. And as I recall it at the time, Bob Enyart Live on TV was one of the few shows. I can't remember any other show, but Bob's show, I think Bob was the only host who said out loud what most Americans thought about Ellen's stunt.
Yep.
Bob Enyart said, quote, "Homos make me sick," unquote.
Yeah.
And I believe that's a verbatim quote, Fred.
Yeah, I think it is. I almost guarantee it is. I remember that was around the time I started watching Bob's show. Actually, a little before that. And he had come up with the homo-free month. I wonder if it all stemmed from this Anne Heche and Ellen DeGeneres episode that really was, it seemed like putting the foot on the gas pedal of pushing the homosexual agenda.
You know, that could be the origins of the homo-free month because, like you say, after that event, it seemed like everybody had to talk about that topic all the time. And I think maybe by June, maybe Bob was sick of it. And so he just decided we need to take a month off. I think that might have been how it went. So Bob was the only one who said homos make me sick. All of the other conservative hosts, and there weren't that many back then. In fact, I'm trying to think if by 97, was there anybody but Limbaugh? I don't know. I mean, Hannity might have been riding Limbaugh's coattails by then. I can't remember, but who can remember Sean Hannity? But whatever Rush was saying, that's what Sean was saying. But anyway, Rush Limbaugh would kind of joke about it, and he kind of gave the old, well, not that there's anything wrong with that, and she should be free to be who she is and whatever. But, you know, I wish she wouldn't put it right in our face. That was, I'm paraphrasing, but that was Rush Limbaugh's take, and that was kind of conservative America's take, and I think that was even the church's take. Was, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that, and we love them, and that they should be free, and they can do what they want. We just wish they wouldn't be so loud about it. But Bob went on the air, and he said, no, wait, homos make me sick. And Bob was actually saying what America felt, because if you remember, Ellen's show was canceled the following season.
Mm-hmm.
Because middle America was grossed out. By the fact, I mean, America still had enough of a gag reflex back then that we collectively turned her show off because we were all grossed out by it. And so the only reason I go back into that, Fred, is because 1997 now is also the same year that Ellen DeGeneres started using Anne Heche as a prop, basically.
Yep.
Anne Heche was a woman about 10 years Ellen's junior. And so Ellen started using Anne in 1997. And then a few years later, she ditched her for another woman, somebody younger, maybe better looking. And by the way, that's a pattern that Ellen DeGeneres would follow right up until now into her old age, even. It's almost as if Ellen DeGeneres wants to mimic the immoral man that Ellen so much wants to be. She acts like an immoral business tycoon, always trading in one girl for the next, a little younger, a little better looking. Anyway, it's like Ellen wants to be that guy.
And so Anne Heche got tied to her, right?
Yeah. So Anne Heche, they came out at, I forget some, it was some award show, and it became the next big scandal in the well-coordinated, well-funded effort to basically normalize everybody talking about homosexuality all the time, which up until then, Fred, it wasn't something that was discussed all that much out in public. These events made it a mainstream topic for discussion, and in doing so, kind of hardened all of us against just our natural gag reflex to not even want to talk about that because it's gross, you know? Well, Ellen used Anne to force us all to look at that, to look at something that we couldn't unsee after that. And then so Anne Heche, and go ahead and read the articles that are out there about her. She basically became that lesbian that Ellen came out with back in the 90s. That's what everybody knows about Anne Heche. I mean, she kind of maintained a middling career in entertainment. She had a number of very public breakdowns. Failed relationships, problems with her mental health, drug and alcohol abuse.
A real train wreck. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And so her life, I believe, will actually serve historians as a touchstone for so many of the lives lived out by my generation. When historians sift through the wreckage of my generation, Anne Heche's life will serve as a touchstone for them to understand what happened to my generation. And but just by the way, Anne Heche and I are about the same age. We're about the same age at the time of her tragic and untimely death. So anyway, Fred, since Bob is not here to eulogize Ms. Heche properly, I feel something of an obligation to do so. If you look at the news reports that came out about her, and it's already died down, you notice she's pretty much been forgotten.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad that just a week or two after a shocking, untimely, tragic death, for the media to just kind of coverage evaporates and she's disappeared into history. It's kind of sad. But while they patch all up around the embarrassing seams and they canonize Anne Heche, it's almost, Fred, like they're preparing for their ultimate canonization of Ellen DeGeneres, as her and Anne will be saints in the pantheon of women's liberation and gay rights. Well, while all that's going on, I'd like to remind everybody to look at the truth. Anne Heche's ignominious career culminated in a spectacular display of all the worldly glory that she brought upon herself, upon her family, and upon her generation, and really on America. It represented what she brought upon America. She destroyed herself, wasted, speeding out of control into a brick wall in a fiery crash with screaming neighbors, frightened children, and black smoke rising up into the sky. That was the culmination of her career. And so she drove her car into someone's house and it blew up and caught on fire.
Yeah, some speculate it might have been a suicide.
Well, and that's like maybe on purpose, maybe not. I'm guessing mostly by accident, but I'll bet you, Fred, mostly just wasted and out of control. That will be what we discover to have been mostly what it was. Well, she was just wasted and out of control. And so as she languished in the hospital, Fred, you know, she's like too far gone for anyone to communicate with her. And her family decided that the best thing to do was to just end it. I mean, keep her alive long enough to take out some organs that might help another person, which seems like to everybody to be a humanitarian and wonderful thing. But hey, maybe one of Ellen's younger girlfriends could live another 10 years on Anne's liver. Who knows? So let's keep her alive for anyway. It's just like once she's used up, Fred, they just pull the plug, you know?
Yep.
And she would have wanted it that way, don't you think? She wouldn't have wanted to live like this. She would have wanted it that way. That's how all of the people who she would have hoped at the end would have loved her and cared about her. That's pretty much, I'm guessing that's pretty much how they talked about her as she lay there dying in the
She would have wanted it this way. Hearing about this in the news, it reminded me of our show on Brain Dead Isn't Dead. And so we know that there's a chance, we don't know how much of a chance, that she was totally conscious while all these people are talking about her. It's like, what was she thinking if she was, you know, able to think? Because we know that there's plenty of examples where people actually had the mental capacity to hear everything people are saying about them. They want to take my organs out. Hey, I can hear you, but I can't communicate with you. So, so
can
tragic.
You imagine?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, and, you know, when she finally got herself into a position where really only the love and the dedication of other people could have maybe saved her, the other people who ended up around her, they end up treating her just like Ellen DeGeneres had treated her.
Wow, yeah,
good
point.
And really just the same way Anne Heche had treated Middle America. Mm-hmm. The same way Anne Heche had treated Middle America when she forced us all to look at her dirty life. And like I said, it was something we could never unsee. And America was never the same after that. And by the way, neither was Anne Heche.
Yeah.
And neither was Ellen. None of us were ever the same after that. But now I would say to anyone who's looking in on the end of Anne Heche, just to let her end serve as a byword and a warning. How did it end? Wasted, out of control, crashed and burned beyond recognition. Alive, but declared brain dead by the people who should have loved her and tried to save her. Declared brain dead, then chopped up and handed out among the living. It's like, well, she's used up already and we're done with her. Okay, are we done? Pull the plug. It's really sad. I mean, I hope nobody I know, Fred, ends up that way.
Yeah, I agree. You know, this reminds me, Doug, hopefully next week we'll get to what you were going to share with us, thoughts on the legacy media and how they're able to stay on the air despite running such terrible programming. Well, that Ellen show probably would have survived in this day and age because, you know, the left would want to keep promoting this garbage. So I encourage everybody, we're hopefully going to get to that show next week. But Doug, you called Anne Heche alive, but declared brain dead. And so that brings us to the research that Bob and I did back in 2017. And it's what a growing body of evidence seems to be showing us about the question lots of people have. Is brain dead actually dead? I mean, I think about this anytime I hear of a story of somebody who's, you know, declared brain dead. And are they truly brain dead? I remember maybe it was 2 years ago, you know, some guy that a freshman at CSU, he got hit riding his bike right next to my daughter's apartment building. And he was declared brain dead. And I'm just thinking, man, don't pull the plug. Hold out as long until he's actually 100% dead, because he could easily be alive. But, you know, the parents pulled the plug on him. Yeah. So it's really a super important topic. The brain dead is actually something other than dead. We've learned that. And, you know, I'm not a doctor, but to me, something other than dead would be alive, wouldn't it, Doug?
Yeah, that's, yeah. Other than dead would be alive. And so, Fred, I don't know if you can relate to what I wrote here. But anyway, I've just noticed, and it's something that Bob pointed out kind of tangentially over the years that I kind of put together after he died, but so when you add words to things and you add syllables and words and extra, it's because generally because you're lying or you're trying to cover something up.
So brain dead by definition does not mean dead. And I don't even have to get into a lot of clinical explanation about that. We can keep it really simple. Just looking at the number of letters, syllables, and words involved, if it meant dead, there wouldn't be the need to insert an extra word into the term. You would just say dead. But brain dead is actually something other than dead. And as I mentioned, you know, I'm not a doctor, but to me, something other than dead would certainly be alive.
Exactly, Fred. Exactly. I mean, I've been saying for years that we need to stop allowing the so-called experts to add all these extra words to things like brain dead. Brain dead doesn't mean dead. Just like biological female, Fred. I remember when it used to just be female. We didn't need all those extra letters and syllables. But now, for some reason, it's biological female. And you're like, what happened there? I mean, so what does it mean, Fred? Is there now something or someone that's not a female, but it's not a male, but she's a biological female? And is that now a he, or is it something else? And what is it anyway?
It's a letter.
Anyway, by the way.
LGBXTQBZY.
Yeah, there you go, Fred. It's another letter in the chain of, what started out as LGBT, which that in and of itself was rather cumbersome. I remember when that first started. Yeah. I was like, LGBT, couldn't you think of a better acronym than that, for crying out loud? Now it's got like 15 letters added to it. And so, like, who said there had to be something like that anyway, Fred? It makes me crazy.
Yeah, it reminds me of this Mimic poster that was Rocky 38. They showed a real old guy in a walker. So maybe we need to come up with a meme that has, like, in 2050, here's the new term: LGBTQTZPFXYZ12598. Really long sentence of letters.
You'd almost have to get into numbers at some point.
Yeah, I mean, you can take the term traditional marriage, for example. It used to be just plain marriage. But yeah. Now, you know, I hear the term traditional marriage even coming from conservatives. So why do we have to attach that word? And when Christians and conservatives let the left redefine things without standing up and fighting back, we end up in a place like we are right now, where some people can declare another person as something other than alive when they are actually alive. But since we have a word for it, oh, your mom is brain dead? Didn't you know, you ignorant rube? That's right. By brain dead, we meant dead. Don't ask us about that pesky extra word in there. Don't make us fuss about one measly extra syllable. That just means it's too complicated for you to understand. Your mom is brain dead, so now do the right thing and pull the plug. Oh, but not until we harvest her organs.
Yeah, right, Fred. And that's sadly where Anne Heche ended up. And I'm going to go into just one more thing about Anne that Bob and I did not know. I should say Bob, because I wasn't really working with Bob when all this happened, but I was watching him on the air. And that was one thing about Bob, Fred, is when you watched him on the air, after a little while, after you got over the initial shock that, hey, did that guy just say what I think he said?
Did he just say what I was thinking?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, once you got over that, he was like a member of the family. And so I felt like I knew him, because I could relate to him. But so the thing that Bob didn't know at the time about Anne Heche, and by the way, about Ellen DeGeneres, what we didn't know about all these women, but what Bob could have predicted, and I'll just ask you, Fred, here you have a woman who's an adult and she's sexually dysfunctional. What might have happened to her as a child?
Oh, good question. I think there's probably a pretty good chance she was molested.
Exactly. And so what the homosexualist advocates never wanted to admit is something that Bob always made a point of, is that most of the people who are sexually dysfunctional in this way as adults were molested as children. Homosexual men reproduce by molesting children. And mm-hmm. that used to shock people. And people used to say, oh, Bob Enyart, he hates everybody. Well, now go back and read Anne Heche's own book. Read Ellen DeGeneres' book. All these famous lesbians. And what did they write in their own books? Well, here's what Anne Heche wrote, what she said in a 2001 interview. Her father, Donald Heche, who the reporter calls a seemingly devout Christian, turns out to be a homosexual. Her father turns out to be a homosexual who cheated on her mother. He died of AIDS in 1983 after having raped and molested Anne Heche since she was a toddler. So Anne Heche was raped and abused by a deviant, pervert, homosexual who died of AIDS in 1983. And that happened to be her father, which is one of the most horrible things that could ever happen. I can't think of anything more horrible that could happen to a human being, a little girl especially. And so I want to let America know that when Bob Enyart stood up and said, homos make me sick, when Anne Heche and Ellen DeGeneres forced us to look at them, Bob Enyart loved Anne Heche and Ellen DeGeneres more than the rest of America, mm-hmm. because what Bob Enyart said went to the heart of why Anne Heche was such a disaster, why her life was a mess, why she ended up in a ball of flames and smoke, wasted, out of control. homos make me sick. Homos make everybody sick. Homosexuality poisons a culture. It kills people. It destroys children. And so Bob was one of the few people willing to express that love. And so I'm thankful that he was there to do it. And Bob Enyart's tactics and strategies will one day be recognized as the loving and caring efforts they were. All right. So now let's get to Brain Dead.
But real quick, so this reminded me of kind of an argument I've used in defense of what Bob is doing. If you love somebody, say you have a brother and he's taking heroin, you don't want him to. You want there to be a stigmatism on that, and because it's going to kill him eventually. So heroin makes me sick. Doug, does heroin make you sick?
Heroin should make you sick, yes.
And the left would probably have no problem with that. But, you know, homosexuality, we know from the statistics, and statistics and the data doesn't lie. I mean, they have a much higher, their life expectancy is much less than a person who isn't a homosexual, and for a whole myriad of different reasons. You know, sexual disease, suicide rate is much higher, murder rate is through the roof with homosexual men.
Right.
But even lesbians, they don't have the same life expectancy as normal people. So like a heroin addict, if I have somebody who's doing heroin, or someone who's wants to be a lesbian, and I say wants to because you're not born that way, I would want to encourage them not to be, and for there to be a stigma on it. But there isn't, unfortunately. And so many people in today's culture, it's so sad. They're either delving into homosexuality or they're mutilating their bodies and deciding, oh, I think I'm a man, and even though I was born a woman, or vice versa. And it's the level of perversion is just going through the roof. And a lot of it is that Christians haven't stood up for the truth and realized tactics like Bob Enyart's actually work.
Yeah, and are actually, Bob Enyart stood up and said, no, homos make me sick, even though he didn't know for a fact, he didn't have all the facts that it was a homo who made Anne Heche sick. It was a homo who destroyed and set her life up for the catastrophe that it ended up being. So Bob was prophetic in a way. And so thank you, Fred, for the comparison, because that's very helpful to help people understand. Insert heroin, insert crystal meth, insert fentanyl, because they're all dangerous and they all destroy people. And this idea, Fred, that we can declare people brain dead, let's go through, because about 5 years ago, you did a great list of actual stories about actual people who woke up and recovered after being declared brain dead. And I remember one of those stories, Fred, was the father in, I believe it was down in Texas, the father who had armed himself and gone and barricaded himself in his son's room so that the authorities and the hospital and his ex-wife, so they couldn't pull the plug on his son, who they said was brain dead. Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you can go listen to that show or read about it at rsr.org/brain-dead.
Well, just a quick update on that story. That was George Pickering down in the Houston, Texas area. His 27-year-old son, George Pickering III, who was declared brain dead, who dad barricaded everybody out and kept his son alive. Well, dad was duly charged and went to trial. He served a 10-month prison sentence. But now George Pickering and his son, George Pickering III, nobody's in jail anymore, Fred. Everybody's recovered. They're healthy. And the George Pickering III said, the important thing is I'm alive and well, and my father is home, and we're together again.
Yeah, and you know, I bet you that father would have served a life sentence to save his son.
Amen. Yeah. Amen. And what an act of bravery. I'll tell you, that was an inspirational story. If you haven't listened to that show, folks, go back. And I'll link to this article, because it gets into some details that I don't think you and Bob may have even known back then, because they weren't known until after the trial. Really interesting story.
So, yeah, and since then, there was, for example, Trenton McKinley, a 13-year-old boy. He was severely injured in a dune buggy accident, and his parents decided to donate his organs. You know, he was declared brain dead. They signed the papers, and then all of a sudden, he miraculously regained consciousness. Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, and I know this is going to make people uncomfortable, but like I say, Fred, it's almost like an occupational hazard that we make people uncomfortable. Everybody thinks the idea of donating your organs is so humanitarian, and it's like the greatest thing you can do, and it makes you a good person and all of that. And I have nothing against the idea of wanting, if I were to die suddenly, Fred, and my lungs and my liver and my eyes, if they could help another person, I don't really have a problem. I think it is good. But unfortunately, when something good is administered by organizations that are evil and wicked, something good can become corrupted. In fact, like Bob used to say, all sin is something good that becomes corrupted. And so this harvesting of organs has turned into, in so many cases, families being pressured and maybe even bullied into accepting this diagnosis of brain dead so that the doctors can get their hands on the organs. And then the doctors themselves may be motivated by altruistic motivations, but the system has become corrupted in this diagnosis of brain dead. Well, you just gave us another example of why it's not true, Fred. I'll give you another one. A newborn, Caleb, was placed on life support. Caleb's father, Becky and Phil, received the news. He had suffered severe oxygen starvation. Doctors told him there was no hope for his future. They transferred him to hospice with the intent of removing his life support. They told his parents he would only live for a few minutes when they took him off life support. But when they took him off life support, instead, he squeezed his mom's finger and he woke up. And this brain dead baby that they said was brain dead did not die. In fact, he did the opposite. He lived. And at last check, when this article was published, Fred, the baby who had zero chance is 15 months old.
Wow. Yep. Then there's one back from March of last year. A teenager named Lewis Roberts, he was struck by a vehicle and suffered severe head injuries. And his family was told 4 days later that he had lost his fight for life. So I'm sure they said he's brain dead. And so they were told to say their final goodbyes. But hey, lo and behold, he awakes hours before they were going to start lopping off, taking organs out of his body.
Wow.
You know,
well, I've got one here, Fred. This is from the courts, actually. A three-month-old baby had been pronounced dead, right? And there was a court proceeding in process. Mr. Justice Hayden was hearing an application so that the British National Health Service could declare the baby brain dead and remove ventilation and stop medication. And while the court hearing was in process, the three-month-old baby started breathing. Started breathing, and they brought the news to the court. Well, we have to stop the proceeding to declare the child brain dead because it turns out brain dead is not dead and the child was actually alive. And oddly enough, Fred, the judge said that this was, quote, entirely unforeseen and unprecedented in the experience of all this court, unquote. Well, here's the thing, Fred, it's not unprecedented. And the judge shouldn't have looked at this as unforeseen because, well, just here on Real Science Radio, we've documented a dozen of these cases. How many might there be out there, Fred?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Bob got a pretty decent amount of response to the last show when we did that show in 2017 on Brain Dead Isn't Dead, you know, from people who were Googling and researching this who were in that situation.
I can imagine. Can you imagine, Fred, you're actually in that situation and you have to decide and the pressure and they're on Google, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, what's so cool about Real Science Radio is a host, I learned things myself, and it's been an eye-opener for me, too, you know? And so every time I hear of brain dead, like I mentioned earlier, I just think, man, this person could easily be fully alive and even aware of their situation. In that show we did in 2017, we talked about several cases where the person was actually conscious. One person was in a coma for years, and he could hear everything that everybody was saying about him. We know from just science. We can really look at science and say, hey, we know that the mind, it can exist outside the body. Daniel Hedrick and I did three shows on this, on terminal lucidity, which is a phenomenon that really is evidence itself for this. Yeah, mathematician Descartes, he described it as mind-matter dualism or Cartesian dualism, and that states that the mind can exist outside of the body and the body itself cannot think. So I'd encourage people to go to listen to those shows. Again, go to rsr.org and look for terminal lucidity. There was one example, Doug, of epilepsy patients, and some of them have it so bad that they have to split their brain in two. It sounds really, you know, crazy, wow. But it actually helps them, and it's called the split brain. Well, secular scientists had predicted that you could have a dual personality, dual minds. Well, that's not the case. You're still the same person. In fact, they behave the same way. And there's really good existence that there's something going on outside of these two parts of the brain that were disconnected from each other. You know, because one side of the brain controls like the other side of your body and vice versa and other mechanisms. But they found that the person was still, their mind was still able to do things that there's no way could happen based on just relying on connections between the brain. Like being able to tell, for example, a vowel, that, hey, this is a vowel in a sentence, like a construct. That's mental. It's totally, it's information-based. And that's outside of the actual physical brain and outside of the body. Again, wow. That's from the Terminal Lucidity shows.
Yeah, definitely. So, Fred, the interface between our mind, our body, our soul, our spirit, it's all so mysterious and sophisticated. But just one thing that you just said, and you didn't even say this on purpose. So I don't even know if you said it, Fred, but this is what I heard, is that when you hear that someone's brain dead, the first thought that enters into your mind is, boy, this person could be hearing. They could be conscious and aware. And so this is the difference between a Christian mindset and a materialist mindset is, Fred, your default position is for life. Your default position is for hope. And we're living in a society where the remnants and the legacy of our Christian heritage means that even many people who aren't believers have this default position toward good and kindness and life and hope. But as we become further and further separated from that Christian heritage, and as there are fewer believers making up the fabric of our society, the more and more that default position in people's minds is going to be what was in the minds of the people who surrounded Anne Heche in that hospital room. The default position is going to be death and utilitarianism. Let's use it. Let's use her. Let's pull the plug. Let's get it over with.
And it's actually even many Christians. There's many believers that have been contaminated by this worldview, as we see with a lot of cases where Christians compromise and their brains get, you know, conditioned to supporting things like this. One example that comes to mind that our producer, Dom Inyart, mentioned about a class he took in college, and he wrote a paper on this very topic, you know, brain dead doesn't mean dead. So, quote unquote, Dom's Christian professor was offended by this, and, you know, I think even threatened to flunk him. Was that correct? Yep, he's shaking his head, yes. So we also want to reach Christians who have been polluted with a worldview that supports secular ideas and really the prince of the world, a lot of the things that are being pushed that are negative. I mean, how many Christians actually support homosexual marriage? How bad is that? From 1997, pretty much nobody supported it. And now, if they took a survey, it's probably well over 50%. And I wouldn't be surprised if at least 50% of Christians support homosexual marriage now. Mm. It's a slippery slope that's getting more and more slippery. And Real Science Radio is there to try to put a brake on that.
Yeah, amen, Fred. And so I encourage everyone, disconnect from the popular culture, because there are things, it's like what happened in 97 with Anne Heche and Ellen DeGeneres. These things will just be vomited out on you, and you can't wash that off. You can't unsee that. Mm-hmm. And so you end up, your own mind becomes corrupted and polluted, even if you are a believer. And if you're not a believer, by the way, if you're not a believer, I was raised in a Christian house, Fred, but by the time I graduated high school, I had so many things that my mom and dad taught me were contradicted by what I had learned in the government schools and what the popular culture was telling me. I wasn't sure if Christianity was real or true, and I basically looked at all the different religions and all of the different lifestyles And I even participated and partook in many of the destructive lifestyles that the pop culture told me were good and would make me happy. And so at the end of the day, Fred, I came to the conclusion that this idea that there was a creator who actually made everything and that he would be my judge, that he would judge the world, but that he loved the world so much and that he cared about people like me and even me personally so much that this all-powerful being, this all-powerful creator would send his own son to come and to give his life, to sacrifice his life so that I could be reconciled to my creator. Fred, that story, that idea made the most sense to me, that if there was a God who created everything, that he would have to be good. And if he was good, then he would care about me. And how could he show that he actually cared about me? What would be the ultimate way to show that you care about someone else would be to give your own life for that person. And so I intuitively knew that that's true love, that you would actually die for someone. And that is the truth, that we have a creator and that he will be your judge, but he's offering to be your savior. He's offering to be your friend. And all you have to do is humble yourself. Humble yourself and look into who he is, read his book, hear his story, and trust him. If you read his story, Fred, I'll tell you, I have not found one thing in the story that Jesus Christ himself told or the story that was told about Jesus Christ in the Bible. I have yet to find one thing that would make me think that I could not trust him with the fate and the destiny of my eternal soul.
Yeah, so true, Doug. And that's what this show's all about. I really appreciate you sharing that. And I'll mention a website that I have, BibleEvidences.com, if you want to see that the overwhelming evidence that supports the truth of the Bible. So we're actually out of time. Next week, we're going to talk about the legacy media. And Doug, this is still a tease for me, not just the radio out. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say. You haven't shared with me your thoughts on it, but I know it's going to be the usual very profound wisdom. I can't wait for that. We have other shows coming up. We're going to eventually get to the Setterfield cosmology. We did a show about 8 months ago. It's been too long. We did one on the slowing of the speed of light and how constants aren't always constant. Well, that was supposed to set us up for a Setterfield interview, but his health hasn't been the best. So we've got a resident scientist that helps us with RSR, Real Science Radio. He's going to join us. That's coming up in probably the next month. And Doug, you have an interview with a guy who wrote a really cool book. We're going to have a show on that.
Yeah. So Tom Rogers and atomic biology. We talk a lot about molecular biology, creation. Tom Rogers has a really interesting take on bringing all of the things we love to talk about down to an atomic level. I'm looking forward to interviewing Tom Rogers with the Atomic Biology Institute. Yes, sir.
Yep, that'll be fun. We've got another show on the hydroplate theory on some hit piece articles that we want to get into more detail. So we've got a lot of great stuff coming up. So please stay with us. Sponsor a show, rsr.org/sponsor. We love having you in the audience. We love all that you do for us. Please keep helping us out, and we'll continue to share the truth of creation and all the wonderful things that we see all the time. We'll have more updates on the Webb telescope, I'm sure. So, for Doug McBurney, this is Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. To be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.